Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. And we're broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. Gorgeous down here. It glows in the sun thanks to the Fukushima radiation, which is also handy for the economy because everybody now has a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. My very special guest who's joining us today for the full 2 hours is Jason Verbelli, and I believe that he has some nice little YouTube videos and things of that nature for you, which can be located at youtube.com/TheRealVerbs. That's Verbs with a Z or a Z if you happen to speak English properly. And there's also facebook.com/TheRealVerbs. Verbelli, and it's V-E-R-B-E-L-L-I, and he's not a person who swallows verbs, I think, hence Verbelli. All right, Jason, welcome to the program.
How are you doing, Vinny? Vinny, long time no talk, actually.
Yeah, man.
It's the first time we've talked. Whoa.
Is it?
I think so.
All right.
Yeah,
well, let's not waste our time then. Could you tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is you do, Jason?
Absolutely. My name is Jason Verbelli, and I just consider myself a free thinker, independent researcher, and experimenter who likes to meet with other inventors and study the suppressed sciences, stuff that you're not going to find in libraries, you might not hear promoted in universities, and the stuff that's been swept under the rug and not been given the credence and acknowledgement that it deserves. So I study things like Professor John Searle's technology, the work of Walter Russell. I try to experiment for myself dealing with structured water so that we can improve our health and see if we can make plants grow faster and all sorts of good benefits. And just really testing stuff out for myself and seeing what seemingly esoteric information that we can find and collect, put in context for ourselves, and apply it. Bruce Lee had a good quote. It says, knowledge, quote is skipping my head, but the point of the quote is that knowledge is not enough. We must do, and we have to apply the information. You can't just collect it and talk about it. You got to be about it. Try to share that with other people so that we can evolve, elevate ourselves, and all that good stuff. So what I've done is compile a bunch of videos on YouTube dealing with these alternative perspectives in science and philosophy. Again, mainly dealing with Walter Russell, John Searle. I have Ed Leedskalnin material up there, Walter C. Wright, stuff from the electric universe model, and things that might sound new to people, but these ideas are quite old, some of them being over 100 years old. So going back to our roots, that's the point, and giving acknowledgement to this unacknowledged information and see what we can do with it, man.
I've not heard of these people of which you speak.
Many people have not. Walter Russell was good friends with Nikola Tesla and Mark Twain, and they validated each other's work. There is a quote from Nikola Tesla to Walter Russell that says, Tesla advised Russell to lock away his ideas for the next 1,000 years until humanity was ready. And I say, I don't want to wait that long. So I'm taking it upon myself to see how we can interpret his information and compare it to those mainstream perspectives, which turn out not to be as accurate as they could be. They are great working in the world as we know it today, but there's a lot more to discover, a lot more to acknowledge, and if we want to start using these other forms of energy, we're going to have to start acknowledging these other guys' perspectives and experiment and fund them. Because you can do things on small scale, but every electrical engineer knows that if you can identify a phenomenon on one scale, you can scale it up and then apply that. So I like to provide people with names that they might not have heard of. And again, I encourage people to visit my YouTube channel so that they can see this information in context and a couple hundred videos of stuff that I've compiled, again, dealing with this stuff. Within the past 3 days, I've uploaded maybe over a dozen new videos. Last Sunday, I was with Fernando Morris, who is a member of the Searle Magnetics Incorporated, and that is based on John Searle's technology. And what we are doing here in Southern California is we have a research and development facility where we are studying and experimenting with John Searle's information step by step and trying to identify his original claims in a realistic environment, dealing with a limited budget, and seeing what we can provide to people information-wise and experiment-wise to show them that indeed this man discovered some very unique characteristics of magnetism many decades ago. And he makes magnets very, very differently.
Well, specifically, how does he make them differently and to what purpose?
The purpose is to generate energy unlike anything else that we use today. He discovered this as a 14-year-old in 1946 and was provided with the funding and resources at the electric company that he worked for at the time. So he was provided all this stuff and he was allowed to develop his ideas. Now, the magnets, they're just made in a completely different way with DC current and superimposed AC current, which sort of throws off the magnetic field of a magnet. And luckily I have actually a magnet here you can see. This is a standard ring magnet. What we have here is a magnetic viewing film. And what it is it's like this magnetic reactive fluid smashed in between this piece of plastic. So as you hold up a magnet, see if you can get the glare off of there, you can see the imprint of that magnet right there. You can see where that so-called line separates the north half from the south half. Now, what John Searle learned how to do and discovered is that flat line that's going around the that material separating north from south, he figured out a way to make it into a wave so that there's a variation on that block wall is what it's called. And his magnets are operating at a specific frequency. So before we get into all of that and the technical stuff, Last Sunday, Fernando Morris and myself conducted a presentation here in Southern California, and I've uploaded that in 6 parts now, so people can see more of the information of who John Searle is, what his work was, and what he achieved, what we are doing today to try to rebuild that, and what we hope for the future when we start to develop this technology even more day by day. So that's one part of the videos that I've uploaded. I also uploaded the PDF presentation itself, so people can go page by page and see the information, scrutinize it, go through, and look it up. So that's another thing I've done. We here at Searle Magnetics visited the Conscious Life Expo in Los Angeles last month. They were hosting a big old conference, and we had a booth there where we were demonstrating some of this electronic equipment that we are using to isolate John Searle's claims and show the behaviors of these magnets and how they relate to his machine. Now, what his machine is it's called the SEG, or the Searle Effect Generator. And what it does is it absorbs frequencies of all types, mainly thermal, and it converts those frequencies into an electric current. So instead of having a battery, and you plug in your device to that battery, and the battery depletes, what this does is it converts the surrounding frequencies into electric current. So all the radiation, all the heat, all of that chaos surrounding us is the battery, is the power source for this device. So as these specially made magnets rotate around each other, they're generating electricity and they're recycling that energy at the same time. So the result is that the area would be brought down in temperature ever so slightly. So that it abides by the laws of thermodynamics. The energy has to come from somewhere. But the laws of thermodynamics are dealing with closed systems mostly, dealing with an isolated battery connected to a light bulb. When that battery's dead, light bulb's out. But what if you constantly charged that battery? You can draw as much energy as you want from the light bulb as long as that battery's being recharged. So just like a windmill, as long as the wind is blowing, it will turn the windmill. Now, if you connect a generator to that windmill, you've got power. So similar concept with the SEG is that this device taps into the energy that is already around us, as Nikola Tesla described, as Paul Dirac described, and all these other really brilliant people, that we are in a sea of energy. And what that does is it utilizes that, just like a windmill does, to maintain rotation of the device, and you draw power from it up to a point. Because you can only draw as much power as is being converted. So the point is that there are different ways to magnetize materials which result in different behaviors. For decades, this man has been claiming that you can imprint these waves onto magnets, and you can create variations and patterns. And for decades, people said, nah, it ain't so. That's it, and that's all. Have a nice day. So a company comes along in 2008 that I'm aware of, and they're called CMR, Correlated Magnetics Research. And what they've done is they've found a way to imprint codes onto the magnets. So let's look at this magnet once more, just to have some context. You have a regular magnet. You hold up this thing and you see the imprint. Now notice that there's black. All that ring is black. Now here's the point. What do we see here? If we can get the glare off. We see geometries. See little patterns made out of the magnetic fields. And if you were to hold that up to this side, you'd see these same things. So what happens when these magnetic fields have these patterns on it? They act differently. Normally, magnets want to come together or they want to repel. Watch what happens with these magnets with the codes on them. So you have them, they want to attract, but at the last second, they repel. So they're doing both at the same time. So the magnets aren't just attracting or repelling. They're doing the same. They're doing both on the same side of the magnet. So again, the point with this is that indeed you can have the magnets be programmed to have different behaviors by magnetizing them in a different way. Scientists for decades said that that was impossible, yet we have this company doing it and showing it. And I have them here, and I've been experimenting with them for quite some time. So perhaps Professor John Searle's claims might have some more validity to them. If these guys are able to imprint codes, why wouldn't John Searle be able to?
That was quite interesting. What you showed there is that just the magnetic field of it actually creates this little spirograph type of pattern inside on the paper, and you know, it's really weird. It's like magic. And what occurs to me is that all of these great people of which you talk about, why haven't their technologies really come out to everybody? Has there been some kind of suppression syndrome, or were they just afraid that humanity was too much of a bunch of mouth-breathing, knuckle-dragging, incompetent, unevolved Twizzlers in order to frickin' get what they're talking about, or that it might be dangerous or something like that, or used for weaponry? What?
I think it's all of the above, but the majority of it is that people don't take it upon themselves to experiment and do it themselves. I didn't find a lot of this information until I got off of my butt and seeked it out for myself. If you're waiting for somebody else to discover it and develop it, it's not going to happen, folks. You got to do it. It's not going to happen unless I do it. So that's why I'm dedicating. I just relocated from the San Francisco Bay Area down here to San Diego so that I can work on this stuff full time and dedicate my energy and mind to this stuff.
Is San Diego fluoridated yet? Last I heard, they were trying to pass a fluoridation measure.
Far as I know, yeah, the water down here is pretty nasty. But I distill all of my water and structurize it, which we can talk about in the next segment.
Indeed you do. All right, Jason Verbelli is my very special guest. YouTube.com/TheRealVerbs with a Z. Back in a minute, ladies and gentlemen. Don't you go anywhere.
Accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are a-changing.
Right, welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that recognizes that the times they are a-changing, which is why it's so easy now for everybody to make a frickin' difference. We've got access to the technology, the broadcasting, the recording, the slight little digital wacky-doos that we've got nowadays in order to broadcast truth and prosperity, in other words, to people. Because let's face facts here, ladies and gentlemen, if whatever is going on right now, just in general, doesn't change, we're all fracked, because it looks pretty, pretty nasty indeed. Look, you're being enslaved in every conceivable way possible. You're surrounded by every toxin imaginable, and the periodic table is practically in your umbilical cord the second you're birthed. We're messed up, baby. Messed up bad. There's got to be some good solutions out there in every single sector. So if you have any idea how to solve any problem in any part of society, and you think to yourself, oh, I bet somebody else has figured that out, I can guarantee you, they haven't figured it out yet. So it's your job right now, being the person endowed with that realization, to do something about it, to create something that actually matters, that will change the world for the better. My very special guest is Jason Verbelli. Welcome back. You were talking about fortifying or distilling water?
Correct. As a recap for the first segment, people can visit my YouTube channel to see the six-part presentation that Fernando Morris and myself just did last Sunday talking about John Searle's technology. With that, I uploaded the PDF slides so that you can go through page by page. John Searle invented a new type of magnets and new type of magnetization process that can be used for the benefit to generate energy and our health. Another thing to do with health is structured water, is what we left off on. And yes, the water down here is pretty nastified. It's bad, Vinny. It's bad.
Yeah. Can you light it with a match?
Almost. It's almost fuel, right? It might as well be. But what I do is I distill my water. What I think we should do first is reverse osmosis the water so it takes out the fluoride and all of the really bad stuff. Because when you boil water, it concentrates the fluoride. It doesn't get rid of it. It concentrates it. So in distilling machines, some of that fluoride might still be able to carry over into the clean sample. So it might be best for us to reverse osmosis our water and then distill it and then structurize it. What does structurizing water mean? Well, molecules can come together. Everybody knows water is H2O, but the orientation of that H2O can be messed up, can be like this, can be like this. The same chemical composition can be structured and oriented differently. So those molecules can be all around nasty, or those molecules can make a beautiful snowflake shape. The more geometries that they have, the more charge that they seem to carry, and the more benefit that they seem to give when you drink it or water plants with it or whatever you do with the water. So
apparently some dude once upon a time used magnets in a salmon farm or something like that, and he made these salmon that were like prehistoric, you know, like huge, chunky, kind of muscly, healthy salmon. Really weird stuff, man. You can do so much with magnetism.
I had no clue about the salmon farming in that regard, but I do know about the plants. Now, there's a guy named Dan Winter, and he has a device called the Imploder Nozzle. He's selling it for quite a hefty fee, but on my YouTube channel, I have taken the liberty to show people how to make their own version of it for a lot cheaper. Or, because Dan has done the work for us, we can choose to purchase his model. If you don't have the money, you can make your own in this other way. What it is you have ring magnets forced together that want to repel. Force them together anyway. Take a stainless steel washer, put it on the magnet. It'll stick. Now, normally that other magnet will want to repel from that magnet, but it will stick to that stainless steel washer as a common bond. It'll stick anyway. So when you pass water through those ring magnets, when they're stuck, forced together like that, for some reason, it affects the quality of the water, and when you water plants with it, the plants grow many times faster. Who knew? Apparently,
allegedly, you can do that with the fuel intake of your engines as well. If you put those magnets around one of the fuel intakes, it'll magnetize or charge the petrol or whatever, and it now starts to make it burn a hell of a lot better.
People are commercially selling these units now, and even at Home Depot, I saw some sort of water structurizing device where they had either the water spinning in a vortex or going through magnets, trying to mimic this type of science and methods. Victor Schauberger was very well known for studying nature, and nature was his teacher, studying water and structurization. There is a man... What's his name? I think his name is Gerald Polak. I think his name is Gerald Polak. He's with the Electric Universe people. And if you go on to Thunderbolts Project on YouTube, YouTube user Thunderbolts Project. And on there you can see this presentation by this guy, Gerald Polak. Hope I have his name right. And he's talking about structured water and the peer-reviewed studies that they have now concluded with those, showing that indeed there are hexagonal formations of these water molecules which negatively charge the water, and they can create benefit millions of times than what has previously been speculated. Millions of times. That's pretty significant, I think.
So we're talking about water that can, like, turn you into Superman or something like that. You know, leap tall buildings in a single bound, produce acidic urine so that when you piss on the president, he melts like the Wicked Witch of the West.
No, actually, it might produce alkaline urine because the disorder is more acidic. The more ordered something is, the more alkaline it seems to get. So these this type of
probably
water
have probably have anti-cancer properties too, then, and antimicrobial.
Correct. From what I have studied and from the stuff that I have read, it does have a major difference. Now there are studies to show that negative charges. Negative, what they call ions, are have a lot of benefit. They kill bacteria and viruses. So if you can promote a negative charge in the water, and you take that in your body or you water plants with it, then no wonder they're going to be benefiting because of that negative charge, which has been proven to contribute to the benefit of a living system or a living organism. So well, that's what I do in my water.
Apparently, the basis of, say, vitamin C is just preventing electron theft from your cells, essentially. And if you prevent the cells from losing their electric charge and what have you, I'm not sure how this works exactly, you can essentially prevent the body's decay. You can destroy viruses and things of that nature. And essentially, as far as Dr. Thomas Levy has said, pretty much all illness is the result of electron theft.
That's what, again, I have to address that phrase, that term, electron. I don't subscribe to the electron theory. I'm more in line with Walter Russell and Ed Leedskalnin when they said there's no such thing as an electron as they teach it. It's more like an electric whirlpool, not some solid ball particle. So just to get that in the idea of the listener's head. So when we were talking about these mainstream terms like electrons, we're not talking about it in the classic models that they teach in schools because it just doesn't jive with reality. But in order to communicate some of these ideas, you have to use these fallacious terms to talk about it, which I really don't like. I think it's watering down the information to people. But the point
is, what are the other terms for them? If it's not electron, is everything just all one really? And there are certain aspects with everything.
Correct. But when we're dealing with reality, we can see apparent differences between the air and something solid. But really, when it comes down to it, on the what do you want to call a quantum level, nothing really behaves as we see and experience on this scale. Nothing. We don't actually touch anything. All things are repelled, even at the very small 10 to the negative 8 scale or whatever it is. So nothing actually touches. We just feel the magnetic resistance between forces, which we interpret as temperature or feeling or whatever it is. But this electron phenomenon, whatever it is, whatever we choose to call it, there are little things of energy or whatever that are lost from our body, which is why we age, which is why we degrade and decompose. If you can replenish those electrons at a better rate than at which you lose them, you're not going to age at the same rate. You're going to be healthy. You're going to feel happy. And
Can I ask, like, humans generate their own magnetic field, right?
Yeah.
So would illness be caused by a decrease in your magnetic field? Like if something causes you to lose your charge, as it were?
That would be a good way to describe it. But not only a losing a charge, but altering the field. You can still have the same amount of charge, but if it's oriented a little bit differently, you might be thrown, your body might be thrown off to feel the difference in those charges, which might be a dis-ease. When you're at ease, you're healthy and you're happy. When you're dis-eased, something electrically is going on first, which then goes down the chain of command or up the chain of command and affects the physical body. So they say, you know, everything is affected in your aura first or your electric field or whatever we want to call it. Everything has an electric aspect to it first. And when you start messing with that, then you can prevent disease rather than just treat it like we do today. Because we're treating symptoms, not the cause. which is a whole thing about Walter Russell's work, is getting to know the cause of things rather than the effects. This is an electric universe of effects and a magnetic universe of mind.
Well, that's what's kind of important about drinking a lot of water, because you've got an electric body. How are you supposed to get the electricity from your brain to your fingertips or whatever if it's not got some kind of a substance like water to travel through?
Correct. And there are studies to show that you can take your blood, you can put it under a microscope, and you can see all of your blood cells are clumped together in symplasts and rouleaus. It's pretty much as like little clumps of red blood cells stuck together. Like you take a magnet, you break it apart, you see all the chunks. Nasty. So you drink some structured water, test that same person's blood maybe 10, 15 minutes later. You'll see all of those little red blood cells individualized like magnets that want to repel, not stacked together, not clumped. The surface area is able to absorb more oxygen, more nutrients. There's less heat and pressure on each of them. So symplasts and rouleaus, when all your blood cells are clumped up, that leads to heart disease, lung disease, and all this other stuff. When your cells are able to have buoyancy and individuality, they carry more electric charge, and it goes to the benefit of the system. You can see that immediately just by testing your blood under a microscope, drinking good water, drinking tap water. But structurizing water does not mean filtering water. To structurize water, you send it through those magnetic fields, or much easier way, pour your water over spheres. So you have a tube. You have two spheres stacked on top of two spheres, stacked on top of two, stacked on top of two. So one, two, one, two, one, two. Okay, easy. Pour water through the tube. The water will be guided over a more natural wave path, just like in nature, down a waterfall or through rounded rocks in a creek. So when you give water a natural path like that, it seems to improve the quality of the water, which this man, Clayton Nolte, discovered at naturalactionwater.com. And you can compare that study to fractalfield.com/imploder magnetic research. fractalfield.com/imploder magnetic research. And then you can compare those two studies. One of them uses magnets forced together that want to repel. The other one just uses spheres stacked on top of each other. And they seem to achieve the same benefit and quality of the water. So what I've done at my house is combine those two ideas and try to just use that to use for my plants, for my dogs, for my cooking, and for me personally. And I do notice a difference. And my friends do too when they have come over and tried samples.
What about if you would like to install that on a glass? You know, like, I don't know if you've ever been to a really, like, a nice beer bar or whatever, but they had that gold rim around the top of the glass kind of thing when you drink it. What would happen if you had glasses that had a ring of magnet, as you described, around the rim of the glass? Would that magnetize everything that you drink out of that glass kind of thing?
First of all, glass would be very heavy. Secondly, I think you have to have the water spinning as it is going through those opposing magnetic fields. So it wouldn't be too beneficial to just have magnets at the rim of your glass and you're drinking. It seems like you have to cycle the water through these fields. And the more that you cycle, the more benefit that you get. And then you can put it into your glass and drink it. No, I don't think just having or even a straw with tiny magnets on it like that, and you drink that,
like,
might work.
Like a magnetized silly straw. That'd work.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, send it back. That's you. Better pass.
All right, there we go. The magnetized silly straw by Vinny Eastwood, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back after the break at the VinnyEastwoodShow.com.
Vuol più al vento, sola cedo. what happened there, but my internet on the on my phone. Can you see me?
Yeah, well, we've got Jason back. He just dropped off for a second there, and it appears as though his video is out now.
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you just fine. We can't see you, though.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. So there's no problems there.
All right, so, we can still continue.
Although there do seem to be a bit of technical issues, we can hear a little bit of reverberation on my side as well. Your video's not working either. I'm just popping in your landline number here to the studio just in case we need to use that. Okay, well, anyway, welcome back to the show, everybody. My very special guest, Jason Verbelli, The Real Verbs, is his YouTube channel there. Okay, welcome back. Now, what were we talking about before the break? It was magnetized silly straws and what happened. Hey, and I don't know if you've seen the Zeitgeist movie or whatever with the tube trains that they've got, you know, that run on magnets and stuff. I think that would be really cool.
Oh, well, that's a part of the deal with John Searle's technology, is that it operates similar to the maglev train, and how the maglev train travels above the track and it doesn't touch the track. But the maglev train is pretty much a straight line track. Now apply that same thing, but in a ring. So as these magnets are going around this machine, that nothing touches, just like the maglev train doesn't touch. So
nothing will wear out. Yeah, we've really lost you there, Jason. Your connection's kind of making you sound a bit like Megatron. So. American Freedom Radio on the boards there. Would you be able to give Jason a quick ring, and we'll come back to Jason once he's been brought onto the caller line there. Let's hope we can sort this out as soon as possible. Now, I wanted to also make the point here that all of the industries that we currently use to provide us with all our products, like let's say, for example, the automotive industry is the thing that really drives the movement of goods and services, you know, whether that be by trucking or just private vehicle conveyance, you know, going down to the convenience store, picking up a double gulp and then coming back and then poisoning yourself with it. It would not be possible without just the simple carbon-based, you know, fuel technologies and things like that. But the problem is they've been obsolete for so fracking long that it's unfreaking believable. And the difficulty being here is that I know that major automotive companies have indeed used a lot of magnet technology in vehicles that they've made, experimenting and things like that, and have allegedly gotten a lot of success out of these devices, fuel savings and so forth. I know that there are shows all over the place that create an environment where people can come in with their new devices in an attempt to obtain sponsorship or investors and things of that nature, so they can take their simple devices that work allegedly and take them out to market. And this is really the way I think people are going to grow the economy, not this whole green economy idea, which is using current outdated windmill and solar panel stuff, which runs out and breaks down and destroys itself anyway because of all the moving parts in it and what have you, which of course would probably be manufactured by something like the automotive industry, which is corrupt as it is. You know, that's freaking stupid to me. Everybody needs to understand that the newest and the greatest and the best technologies that we have available today were invented a long freaking time ago, just haven't been put into proper usage by anybody because we're too freaking lazy or it's been totally suppressed.
Correct. And again, it's the lack of funding that a bunch of people have been able to figure out certain phenomenon on a small scale. But in order to apply that or make it a commercial reality for others, you'd have to fund them, give them the resources that they need to develop their projects. But many of these people have been funded by some investors, and then those investors see that indeed it works. And if they can exploit it, They might try until it can't get to the market, or something happens where they get seized, their company gets shut down, you get raided by the FBI. Whatever it might be, there are things that help to stumble this type of technology, plural technologies. But the point is that there are people who have developed really wonderful things, and it's just not getting out to the market because of cost. It's just not cost effective for the companies today. And that's what is the point of business, is to make money. So rather than make something that is beneficial, they have planned obsolescence and all that stuff. You know, talking about this kind of stuff for years. But I focus on the application of that information. I'd studied the conspiracy aspect of it, which indeed there is, and I've studied the suppression of information, but now I'm starting to shift into experimenting and applying. It's great to talk and study. Cool. It all exists. Now what are we going to do with it? And how are you going to get it to other people? That's where I'm at right now. So, yes, there are very wonderful things that have been developed. Yes, they work, and yes, they're real. But how are we going to get them to people unless we give these inventors and what they need? So that's why I've chosen to focus on John Searle's technology, because I believe him. I see the implications of it. And rather than just going willy-nilly and, you know, telling people about 20 different projects, I've decided to focus on one and try to get it out. That's what we need to do, is pick something that you believe in, stick with it, be passionate about it, and see it to fruition yourself. And that's the only way, ultimately, I think that these things will come out, is if we do it ourselves. That's it.
Yeah. Well, passionate people work a lot harder than people who don't give a frack. You know, they stay after hours. They say to the wife and kids, sorry, I'm working, as opposed to just going, you know, I don't want to work. I want to be home with my wife and kids.
Exactly.
All right.
But people, a lot of people don't have the time, even though they want to, because we have, you know, people have families. They have a job. They have things that take up their time. So because I have the time, I'm just dedicating myself so that, because other people can't, because I'm so interested in it. So there's so many people that would love to study it. Hey, maybe I can collect information for them and provide it. And then they can take it to the next level, having the info in a cohesive flow rather than trying to look through books and all that stuff. That's what I do. Try to get all the info outlined. Here it is. Investigate it. Experiment with it. Try to have the least amount of time possible for people so that they can try it out. I mean, how easy is it to spin the glass of water with a spoon before you drink it? That helps, rather than drinking a stagnant glass of water. You want to take it to a next level, pour your water over spheres. You want to take it to a next level, get some magnets, force them together, and pour water through it. It's relatively easy stuff, but it does take a little time to put together, and you got to try. Don't take my word for it. Don't take anybody else's word for it. Cool, this brilliant people hundreds of years ago. Try it out. Don't believe them until you see it for yourself. I proved it to myself up to a point, which is why I'm so passionate about it. Because nobody can tell me otherwise, because I've seen it. Period.
Well, a lot of people will just call you crazy or whatever. Just because you're doing something that they don't believe in, like, I don't believe that magnets work. Like, and I think nobody's actually capable of explaining yet why magnets even attract metal yet. Like, nobody knows. They just do.
They can tell you what a magnet does, but not what a magnet is. They can tell you what gravity does, but not what it is. Tell you what electricity does, not what it is. What is it? I don't know. I know that I have enough information to make an educated guess, which is a different guess than what the mainstream community promotes.
Well, sure. Hence it's called an educated guess.
Yeah, you have to have an informed opinion in order to make an educated guess. But if you're just regurgitating the models of other people like Einstein and Stephen Hawking and Michio Kaku, then you're probably going to be stuck in the same tautology and circular thinking that they promoted.
I always thought Michio Kaku was a type of marijuana.
Probably is, actually. Here in California, might be. Right? But this guy, I met Michio Kaku. That guy has the biggest dome. He has the biggest head of anybody I've ever seen in my life. And it's like, it's all skull from what I can tell. I'd rather study Walter Russell and Ed Leeds skulling over Einstein and Kaku.
Yeah.
It's my opinion. Everybody has something to offer, but...
Everybody has something to offer. And some people just, I think, in fact, what was I talking to? I think I was talking to Mehran Tavakoli from the Keshe Foundation. And it turns out that a lot of these guys that are in the so-called authoritative positions in the scientific community, you know, I'm the authority on black holes, I'm the authority on energy or whatever.
Say that word to me, brother.
What they do is they steal the ideas of people that are smarter than them, pass it off as their own, and people believe that they came up with it, and they deny that somebody else came up with it because they're the authority figure.
We'll it's called right ad hoc assumptions.
Indeed. We'll be right back.
Everyone's
welcome back.
Asleep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand, and my very special guest, Jason Verbelli, from Southern California at this particular moment, bathed in the Fukushima radiation as well with all the aborted fetuses. Now, we have the caller lines open. Sorry, it was a bit of a horrendous aborted fetuses joke. I don't know where it comes in. 218-339-8525, ladies and gentlemen. 218-339-8525 if you actually want to join the conversation. If you have some insights or some questions and things of that nature, the number is 218-339-8525. If you're dialing from outside the United States, you just put a 1 on the front there, so it's like 1218-339-8525. Okay, back to Mr. Verbelli, and I was wondering as well, what actually kind of got you into this? When did you first discover all of these things? And I mean, did you used to be like an upstanding citizen, you know, going to your slave job and saying, yes, sir, no, sir, 3 bags full of weed, sir, and doing all that stuff? Or have you always been just kind of like, you know, frack that?
Yeah, the latter, frack that. When I was a little kid, I had these like little magnets set up. There was a bunch of things that got me thinking about this. One of the things was I was playing with magnets as a little kid, and there was a bunch of people over at the house at the time, and I was pushing the magnets even though they wanted to repel, you know, moving them, just feeling the force. Thought it was the most amazing, sacred, spectacular thing I had ever encountered in life. It is, and it still is. So I go to approach some of the guests at the house at the time. Look at this. You see this? You see that? And they said, yeah, it's just magnets. Great. Excuse me? It's just magnets? Hello? Come here. Give me your collar. Come here. Like, just magnets? No, that was like a huge insult to me. And the people who couldn't see the significance in something that I put in such high regard really not hurt my feelings, but sort of disgusted me in science. Because something that special, they couldn't see the significance of it. So I knew there was something really, really important about that. If all these people couldn't see it, and I'm feeling it, and that's just magnets, there's something going on here. So a few years later, you know, I'm listening to Science Channel, doing whatever, and somebody mentioned the term black hole. Ooh, it's a dirty word. So I'm looking up, what is it? I'm asking my parents, what is this thing? And they're trying to tell me the classic definition. Oh, yeah, it's this thing. It sucks in mass so much that it traps in light. Nothing can escape. I'm like, okay, but what is it? I said, well, you're going to have to ask somebody else. I'm like, all right. So I went and asked somebody else. They couldn't tell me. So the more people that I asked, the more people I realized had no freaking clue what it was. So
you know, that definition of the black hole is not entirely dissimilar from the definition I'd give television. You know, it sucks everybody in. No light can come out of it. Nobody can escape from it.
I don't know, it's Fox News or something, you know?
Yeah. The Fox News black hole.
But, like, that's, you know, what I was saying, if I had a school and a kid were to use the phrase black hole, I'd give him detention for using profanity. Because it is just the most fallacious, absurd concept. It's ridiculous. Now, there is a guy named Stephen Crothers who recently has a video on YouTube with the Electric Universe, again, YouTube user Thunderbolts Project. You can see this brilliant guy, Stephen Crothers, talking about the misconceptions of Einstein, of what they call black holes. Look, there's just as much of a black hole in the center of a donut that you eat as there is in the center of a galaxy, or a tornado, or hurricane, or whirlpool, or vortex on any scale. See that? Is there a black hole in there? No. There's the absence of matter in the center of that. There's no mass in the center of the donut. It's literally a hole. And since space is black and you're seeing through a hole, it's not like they're saying. It's not a point of matter so dense that it's trapping in all the stuff. So another thing that got me thinking about this is Walter Russell's quote that says, light does not travel. Wait a minute. When Einstein talking about the speed of light, we can plainly measure the speed of light coming from this to that. No, you're measuring an electric wave travel. And when that electric wave hits something, the heat and light is produced on the surface of whatever that wave hits. Not that the heat and light travel from here to here, but the electric waves travel. And then when they are put in a state of chaos, you feel that difference in chaos as temperature, heat, light. But those waves aren't traveling, as they say. Light can't be sucked in. Light is the absence of motion, as Walter Russell put it. It's stillness, which is a completely different perspective of the universe than what Einstein and mainstream science is talking about. There are misconceptions to address, and there are some really brilliant people who have offered data, pages, and experiments to prove that mainstream models might not be as accurate as they claim. One of those people was Nikola Tesla, who did not subscribe to relativity. He didn't subscribe to Einstein or Edison's perspectives. Now, who invented most of what we use today? Tesla. Yet, when you ask a common teacher who invented electricity or who invented a light bulb, they'll say Edison. They name streets after the con man. They don't teach Tesla. They don't teach Walter Russell. They don't teach the alternative perspectives. So it's just very unfortunate. And unless you take it upon yourself to seek the information out and experiment for yourself, you're not probably only hear about it from word of mouth or a wonderful show like this. So
It reminds me of the movie The Island, where they got all these clones in this massive facility, and they just they educate them to the level of a 15-year-old. They don't imprint them with an awareness of sex or anything like that. They discourage them every time they question things that are going on and what have you, just so that they can keep them going along and use them as products to replace the organs of incredibly wealthy, rich people. A very cool film.
You talk about North Korea?
Yeah, pretty much. And the whole storyline, I feel, of history is very much similar to that storyline in the film The Island, is that essentially you're told this collective story so that people will be satisfied with that collective story and not question that there might be perhaps other things available to it, so that you can be corralled more easily, so that you can be used in order to support they lie in it of itself. And that's what our society really has become, a lie built upon a lie built upon a lie that people accept, and upon that acceptance is built a new society, a society full of liars, cheats, thieves, sociopaths, scumbags, crazy people, that kind of thing. Voila!
the truth only hurts if you live a lie. You know, the proof is in the pudding. Nobody's going to spoon feed it to you. As Nikola Tesla said, today scientists substitute math for experiments, and they wander off through equation after equation until they build a structure which has no relation to reality. And that's exactly what quantum mechanics is doing today. They're taking a bunch of ad hoc assumptions and theories and mathematics. It's not mathematics, it's mathematics. Talking about dynamics and stuff that just doesn't jive with nature. And then they base these rules on it, only on this little level. Their rules don't apply on the big level, only on what you can't measure and you can't see. But how convenient it is for these billion-dollar scientists to be able to write the laws and the rules for that, even though nobody can see it and nobody has ever substantiated it.
Are we talking about the Vatican here or scientists?
Yes.
Yeah, it's the same. It's the same difference, isn't it?
Well, and,
that's my other contention.
Yeah, filtered through the church. The creator of the Big Bang theory was a Catholic priest, George Lemaitre, and all the information had to be filtered through their eyes. And if it doesn't jive with their perspectives, then they're just going to say it ain't so and burn you at the stake, like they did with Giordano Bruno. And
I don't know who Giordano Bruno is.
He lived in the 1400s or 1500s, and he was saying that there's life on other worlds, and that we aren't the center of the solar system, or we aren't the center of the universe, and that our that Mary wasn't a virgin, and a whole bunch of blasphemous things. So they didn't take too kindly to that back then, and they burnt him at the stake. Now, this guy was doing drawings of the flower of life and doing geometric works, and he figured out some, I don't even know how to describe it, like this artwork in relation to the vowels, which relate to harmonics and music. Really brilliant stuff, but you're not going to learn about that in a school, you know? They also teach, you know, from Galileo's theory. Galileo was almost killed. He's in prison for his ideas. And when he dropped the two things off the building, they'd fall at the same time. Well, there's a guy named Boyd Bushman. And what he did is he forced together two magnets that want to repel, really strong magnets. He went to the top of a building and dropped those magnets off the building along with a regular object. The magnets fell slower. What? If gravity is dependent upon density, then why wouldn't they fall at the same time? Like the normal laws. But no, when you have two magnets forced together that want to repel, they fall slower. So did Galileo have magnets to force together at the time that he was doing his experiments? No. We do today, and we could come to some different conclusions and add to those wonderful theories that these people had developed long ago. We could refine them using the tools that we have today and incorporate different ideas rather than be stuck in the same models and hoisting people onto infallible pedestals. And anybody who says differently is considered a crackpot or a pseudoscience. I don't believe in pseudoscience. I believe in pseudo-skeptics who refuse to acknowledge the valid work of other people, and then they label something pseudoscience. No.
Yeah, there's an interesting case here in New Zealand. It's kind of a little off topic, but it's very similar to the mentality. A policeman who was convicted, who was a convicted criminal, who was convicted of planting evidence on somebody, right? Mm-hmm. And they had a funeral for that cop a couple of days ago. And part of his obituary was, his credibility is completely beyond reproach. So you're saying the credibility of a convicted criminal who was a cop who planted evidence on people is beyond reproach. And that's entirely similar to how I feel the scientific community works as well. Hey, we've got all this evidence that you're liars, cheats, thieves, scumbags, and what have you. But, hey! Beyond reproach.
Jeez. You know, there's just a different way of looking at things in the world. And most people look at things through the filter of a church or through the filter of an accepted physics book. But if you look at these brilliant people's experiments, you might see something different. And if you experiment for yourself, you might see something different. That's pretty much what it's about. Not to subscribe to somebody else's theory, but to use their information to help you with your experiments. And if you don't experiment, you're not going to find the conclusions for yourself. You're given all the answers in a classroom as if all of the universe has already been surmised and summed up in a physics book. What motivation is there for a kid to go out in the world to try to discover something since it's already all been discovered in the book, right? Right, just fall in line and... No, there's so much to discover and so much to do that people are not paying attention with, like the magnets in the water and the coated magnets that structurize this and that. You got these technologies and the perspectives and books beyond volumes and volumes of books that people don't know about. One thing I'd like to mention, I took a picture yesterday of just 20 of John Searle's books. There's 40 other books that I couldn't fit on the table. And then there's more books and boxes that the man has written. Books. This guy's written like 100 books. Just that sheer volume of material alone, people should be studying and giving acknowledgement to. But no, nobody knows he's written that.
Can't really read anymore either.
He can't. It's so much material. Some of the books are like 400 pages, and they're typed in 8 font.
Oh,
like there, it's a serious amount of material. John Searle wrote 3 books last year, and he's already writing another book this year. It won't stop. Can't stop, won't stop.
Well, and here's another thing that I found very interesting. People think that science is finite, like it's an authority. Now, you ask that person a question, do scientific experiments still go on today? Are people still experimenting with scientific principles and stuff? And like, well, yes, of course. Okay. Therefore, science is not settled, science is not solid, because experiments are still going on in order to figure out new stuff. Okay? It's not a solid frickin' world. It's a belief structure. It's like atheism, essentially. I believe there's no God, therefore there's no God. I can't prove that there's no God because you can't prove a negative or whatever. And it doesn't matter either or, because I feel comfortable with that fact and I will keep believing it all along the times anyway. And then you have a look at other things along that same atheist strand, which I found particularly interesting coming out of Vietnam POW camps, is that the veterans that were in those camps who had a very strong belief in God, you know, stuff like that, they had a much, much higher survival rate than those who had no faith of any kind. Because when those people were locked away in that room alone, they felt truly alone.
Mm.
And that's something that science has really been corrupted by, I think, is they think that science is about facts, and it should be, in principle, but it's not. It's just another religion at this particular point in time.
Yeah, originally meant to know, and it's not to figure out facts and to disprove this and that. It's to know, and it's your own personal journey in that. And to share that with others, not to try to disprove others, because everybody has a different perspective. We all collect different information. We can work together to get this stuff out to people and at least teach new kids and show them the alternative perspective so that they can choose to pursue it if they want and compare it to these old
ones. We'll be right back, folks.
Yeah. Yeah. And no one like me. Yeah. 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 Congratulations. You made it. Welcome to the Crusader. been a long time coming, yo.
Yeah.
But I'm here now. So what you want to do?
Huh?
How many dudes you really know can flow like this?
Like this?
Like this?
Let's do it.
How many dudes you know vote like this? How many dudes you know flow like this? Not many, if any. Not many, if any. How many dudes you know got the skills to go and rock a show like this?
Welcome back.
I don't know anybody.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest, Jason Verbelli. We like to keep it gangster, you know, in the Rockefeller sense of the word.
Yeah.
Hey, you were just showing us around the lab before over the break and stuff, and you've got like these big, what was that, like a 100-ton press or something? What was it?
Yep, that's exactly what it was. That's a press. That's what we're going to be using to make our own magnets.
Hey, it might be cool for the video, actually, if you pick up the computer and show us around the lab.
Now I have the wire attached to it, and I can't get that going. I'm sorry.
Oh, dang. Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah, I do have pictures on in that presentation that I just did last Sunday. There's a couple slides. I included pictures of the lab that I now am a part of here at Searle Magnetics, and it shows some of the equipment that we're using and what it takes to rebuild this SEG and its technology. So there's just a lot involved. That's like a seriously, that's another 2-hour show. We can just talk about John Searle's technology, and I'd like to be able to come back on sometime and have people call in and ask me some questions, some tough questions, and see if we can get them answered. Because there's a lot of misconceptions out there about his history and about his technology. So part of the reason why I'm working so hard is to clear up those misconceptions so that we can move forward and study this in a professional and realistic way.
Have you noticed that the methodology for discrediting scientists, calling them names and so on and so far, the methods haven't changed, you know? Somebody comes up with a great discovery or amazing facts or whatever. Oh, he's going to destroy the Earth with it. Oh, he'll set the sky on fire. Oh, he'll do this, that, or the other. And today it's the same thing, except you just get called a conspiracy theorist and a nut job first before you get accused of being dangerous.
Yeah, it's a logical fallacy. It's called derision. And it's pretty much just it's trying to clown other people and say it ain't so. That's what I call science, but in a different way. P-S-Y-E-N-C-E. Science versus science. This one is just messing with your mind. This one is just talking about outdated models refusing to acknowledge the rules of nature. So there's a whole slew of topics and peer-reviewed data and all these experiments that people just don't know about and don't look at. And they say, no, I don't want to taint my mind with that material because I already know these models are great. So there's no reason why we should even give consideration to those perspectives. Right. Well, that's just being
pseudo-skeptic. We've got too freaking comfortable, haven't we? Yeah. I don't know about you, but I love it when people tell me that I'm wrong because it means I can learn something for a change.
Exactly. That's the big difference between a lot of people. People will defend what they first encounter, even if that thing they first encounter is wrong. Because it's the first thing that came to you, so you're going to adopt it and you're going to defend it violently until somebody proves that incorrect. And then you'll be more likely to lean towards what makes sense. But the first thing that you encounter is more likely to make sense to you. And then you're going to adopt that and shun other things. Well, so a lot of people do. I'm like you. I don't mind being told I'm wrong. That means, wow, there's more to study. And there's more that we can be doing to try to get this information out. Because I'm still paying electric bills in my house. I'm still paying for the gas and all that, and I don't like it. So I'd like to learn of different ideas because what I'm doing is wrong. You can't say, oh, I'm happy in my life, I'm paying my bills, and that's what's right. No. I don't feel free to the point where I could Freedom to me is being able to travel at any time to any place in the world without having to check in with your government or have to have a passport or pay import-export taxes. Fly there, fly back, your business, that's that. Freedom to me is being able to live without having to pay for food or water, unless you want to try somebody else's food. But you don't. You shouldn't have to be dependent upon the system that we use today, and that all derives from lack of energy. And if we can provide people a more efficient way of producing energy, an independent way of producing energy, then I think that will knock the chain and a reaction would take place in society that it'll change the structure that we live in. But some people say you have to change that structure first in order for these things to come out. Nah, I say it's the opposite. If we want to change the structure of society, we have to get these things out first. And when you use it and you live by example and you're showing your neighbors that you're independent, they're going to want to lean towards your methods. They're going to want to know how you're living so happily and so freely, naturally. So,
unless it's difficult, in which case they go, oh, well, you know, I could be a millionaire, but it would mean that I'd have to work 70 hours a week for like 10 years or something like that and risk everything in my life. Maybe it's just not worth it. I'll just be broke-ass mofo, pay the bills that are consistently rising, and look after my kids in a very subjugated fashion by giving them to the public education system to brainwash and indoctrinate and then report on what guns daddy has in the house.
Yeah, that's I'd call that the Edison complex. Is what did Edison say? He said, invention, it takes 99% perspiration, 1% inspiration. But Tesla was the other way around. He was 99% inspiration, 1% perspiration. And Tesla, I think, had a quote that said, you know, if Tesla was Tesla had a quote about Edison, and he said, if Edison were to try to find a needle in a haystack, he'd sort through every piece of straw until he found the one he wants or something. Instead of taking your time to think, go over in your head, and then all you need to do is one action, boom, there you go. Edison is testing, wasting money, wasting time, doing all these things, trial and error, and then he might get it right. Tesla would think, sit, meditate, go through everything in his head, and the first time he did something, he built it and it worked. Every time. 99% inspiration, 1% perspiration. So the Edison complex, when people say, you know, you have to work hard, no, you have to work smart. You don't need to work as hard in the world that we live in today to maintain the status quo. So my whole motto about this stuff is, we spend billions on all this oil, gas, nuclear, war, company bailouts, and we pay for what we want in life. You pay for what you want, and we're paying for the wrong stuff. So if we would like to see these alternative methods come out, we would have to fund these other people. So let me get this straight. There's a guy on YouTube, he says, why do we waste all our resources funding this free energy BS? So what do you mean research? No, but first of all, it's not being funded. So let me get this straight. NASA is getting billions. CERN is getting billions. The Cancer Society and American Medical Association collect millions every year. They haven't cured cancer yet. How long have they been collecting donations for? Let me get this straight. Billions are spent on war. Billions are spent on company bailouts. Billions are spent on cleaning up oil spills. And there's got to be a better way here. And it costs millions of dollars to send a rocket to destroy somebody's town in another country. So why don't we just hold off on one rocket and give that money to people like John Searle or Marco Rodin or John Bedini, or people who can study Stan Meyer's water car, like Rust Grease. Give that money to people like Josh Toms so that he can fund his million volt march. There's a lot of other things we can be doing. So we're not wasting resources funding free energy BS. First of all, it's not BS. Secondly, we're not funding it. And thirdly, what we are funding is the BS.
Yep, that sounds about the right perspective. That's just how the world works. People have no idea what's going on. And they say that, well, the people who are solving the problems are the problems, and the people who are causing the problems are the solution. You can't make this stuff up, man.
So that's just the dichotomy of society. The people who really, really want to help out can't afford to, and the people who can afford to really don't want to help out because they're making too much money in their current ways. Why ruin a good thing if you're already making millions of dollars? Why would you risk your credibility, your job, and stock options to pursue something that isn't unknown?
Yeah.
Why would you spend money on research and development? Because it's better. It's better than your wars because it's more productive. It's natural. Come on. Give and take. Not just take. Give and take. So now there's a charity. It's called NorthPointCharity.org. And it's a 501c3. It's a nonprofit, IRS and SEC compliant. Everything's legal. So this charity differs from all others because this one is specific to set up for free energy technologies and John Searle's project and projects like it. So if companies have to donate, large companies have to donate to charities at the end of a tax year or at the end of a quarterly earning. Why? Because it will lower their tax bracket. They have to donate. And they have lists of charities that they just give all this money to at the end of the year. So why not just add NorthPointCharity.org to their list of charities? And the irony is the very companies who are preventing this technology from coming out would help to fund it. They don't have to lift a finger. All they got to do is put this on their list of charities that they already have. At the end of the year, money goes to the charities. Now here's a charity for these specific projects. Public doesn't know about it, really. It's only been around since March 3rd of 2012. Been trying to tell people about it. So it's up to us to try to fund these things, if you so choose, or at least tell people who you think can fund it, get them to learn about it, talk to us, contact SearleMagnetics.com, look at the information on SearleSolution.com, and see what we can do together. It's just a matter of getting off our butt, funding the research and development, and getting these people what they need.
Mm. Well, that's true. And the other perspective is crowdsourcing. You've heard of this, and some people have used crowdsourcing to a mass effect. And it occurs to me that we're going to be trying to either trick the current establishment into funding things that will basically lead to their demise and a better future for everybody, but not for them. Not entirely in a dissimilar fashion. It's more or less the opposite of what's happening now at the moment, is the corporations are tricking the people into buying products that destroy themselves. So it'd be very interesting to trick the corporations into funding projects that destroy themselves and instead wind up with a better world at the end of it. And the other element is as well, just telling the truth and getting people who are well informed and absolutely on the ball, who have a spare $5, to all contribute just a little something. Because, you know, if you had a million people who gave $5 or whatever, and by today's internet standards, that ain't that difficult. It's certainly not impossible. Mate, you could fund a free energy device through to the point where it could actually be marketed, processed, and get out to people. You know, these are the simple steps that we can take, even if it's step by step, day by day, getting these different products online and out there for general consumption. This is how we would really reshape and revitalize the economy, not carbon taxing everybody.
Yeah. Now, you gotta give consideration to the hungriest people in the world. You know, they really don't care how your machine works. All they care about is it can power your house. Can it help us eat? Can it give us some electricity? Great. Care how it works. They're not trying to disprove, oh, it can't. It can't work because it violates this law. It can't. No, they're hungry. They want this. They need this. So rather than trying to quibble and fight amongst yourselves, why don't you try to figure this stuff out rather than saying it ain't so and apply it to the people who really need it, because they really want it and they don't have the means to get it. And should just keep that in the back of our minds. There are people who really want it and don't care how it works, just as long as we get it to them.
Yeah, well, and that's not entirely dissimilar from the average consumer as well. And again, you know, it comes from charity. What if the product was created by charity and then distributed by charity too? Wouldn't that make the world go round like a couple of magnets? We'll be right back after the break with Jason Verbelli, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's our final segment with Jason Verbelli here. And The Real Verbs is his YouTube channel. So it's youtube.com/ The Real Verbs with a Z or a C, as it may be. It used to be The Real Verb Blackwater and then changed it to the real Verb Z?
No, actually, it's just Verbs, V-E-R-B-Z. But then when... like in 2005 or 2006, when I tried to start a YouTube channel, some imposter had already taken the name, so I had to put The Real Verbs.
Inconceivable.
Yeah, I know, right?
Mm. Right, now, final segment here, and we're definitely going to have you back on for another extended interview because there's a lot to go through. Hundreds of books and things of this nature that you're perusing and taking research that hasn't been touched really in decades, if not a century or whatever, putting it all into perspective for people seems to be like one of the most important jobs like on the planet today, you know? It's like, hey, everybody, I know you've been miseducated and brainwashed for like 100 years, but conveniently, I'm not as miseducated, I'm not as brainwashed, and I'm capable of bringing to you in a digestible format the information that was discovered before this mass indoctrination of public schooling and complete domination of all scientific principle happened. So I've got the saying, Jason, in the end, everything comes back to the beginning.
That's similar to what Walter Russell talks about, how light is stillness. Now, all things come from a state of stillness, and all things attempt to return to a state of stillness. Now, stillness is the beginning and the end, and all things will return to it. And in that regard, your motto is correct.
Mm. All things come from stillness, apart from ADHD.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I would also like to ask you as well, you've probably learned a lot of very profound lessons, and what I love to do is every now and again, like, if I don't have a really profound realization that changes my perspective on things along a certain time frame, like, the thing is, basically, I can survive about a month happily without having a profound life-changing experience before I start to get bored with my existence and start to seek out new things to destroy my my current perception of reality with. I was wondering, in what case, like, what was it that really gets your juices flowing to the point where you're thinking, man, everything's really messed up. Like, has there been any points in time where you have almost, you know, lost your sanity, just kind of racking your brain full of this kind of thing, something that's actually really challenged you?
Oh yeah, man. So the sanity was gone long ago. But things just make me very interested, make me open my eyes, and I just see things a little bit differently. The quote from Walter Russell, "Light does not travel." That was so incredibly profound to me. Ed Leedskalnin's view that electrons don't exist and that they're a fabrication of J.J. Thompson. That's pretty big. In 1997, I went to China and I stayed in China for a month. While I was in China, I was able to visit the Shaolin Temple. It's a 1,500-year-old temple. These fighting disciples are like the Shaolin monks, and I was able to bond pretty well with a couple of these monks, and they're still my friends today. I lived with one of them for 2 months in Los Angeles. So I've been in contact with them. In November of 2012, I visited London to stay at my instructor's school, the Shaolin Temple UK. And while I was there, I'm talking to him about John Searle's technology, about this free energy topics, Walter Russell, and all this stuff. And he's sitting there, he's amazed at a lot of the stuff I'm talking about, and he's also amazed that I'm talking to him about it, because he says, what I'm talking about is a high-level Buddhist understanding of nature and of reality. And I'm like, these aren't my ideas. These are ideas that I've learned from these brilliant people. He said, well, those people sound like they knew what they were talking about, pretty aligned with the Buddha. One really profound thing that that my instructor told me, that if true, could be one of the most important things in existence. It's really got me thinking here. Is he said, the last thought that you have in life will have a major impact on how you'll reincarnate. And he says there are people who study 30, 40 years and they practice meditation just to practice for their last thought in life, so that when they're in any given state at the moment of death, they can be they can accept and let go and all that stuff. So that idea is that we have to have no attachment. We have to learn to let go of things and to be fulfilled at all moments. And what you think the last moment of your life might have a major impact on how you live the next life. That right there is so unbelievably important, and if true, would mean everything. And if we could learn how to collect ourselves and how to direct and focus our thoughts so that we are always in balance and that we are happy and fulfilled and have no attachment, learn to enjoy things but don't be attached to them. That's one of the most important lessons that I've learned so far in life. Is to just be fulfilled and to try to let go and enjoy things as they come and connect with as many people as you can. Share your love with as many people and show your passion. Try to be real, be truthful, and have your thoughts, your actions, and your voice be the same thing. If there's no contradiction between what you think, what you say, and what you do, you're in a good position in life. And that's something for us all to focus on as we evolve throughout our own journeys in life and beyond. Is to just keep those things in the back of your mind. That's a couple of things that I thought were extremely profound.
Mm-hmm. Well, something that I was thinking about, I think maybe 2 weeks ago, I was thinking about, you know, what would I say in my final minutes of life, and it would actually be relief and a sense of accomplishment to leave this world. That's basically what my perspective was. Is, you know what, I've done a lot of things that were really cool. I met a lot of people who were really fun, and I felt like I made a difference, and I can safely and easily leave that behind, and at the same time feel relieved that that particular portion of my existence is over, and that I no longer have to worry about any of the things that existed within my current life. I don't have to worry about the New World Order. I don't have to worry about Scumbaggeran. I don't have to worry about any of these things. I'm going to die. You know, death is like a relief, but I don't think many people know that. I think we all really healthily fear it, you know, as all animals do. You know, we don't like the idea of being eaten by a shark, for example. I'm sure if I was being eaten by a shark, my last thought wouldn't be, oh, this is so relieving and relaxing.
That's the hard part, Vinny, is to no matter what state that you're in, even if you're in a state of pain, to be thankful for life, to have no attachment, and to have no change of thought. This was the other profound thing that these Shaolin monks told me, Shifu Yanzu and Shifu Yanle, is that there is a difference between nothingness and stillness. And I thought, you know, the stillness meant like, you know, the void, like space. So no, the stillness just means no change. You can remain still in your mind, yet your body is breathing, your heart's pounding, and your lungs are moving. But if your mind is in a state where there's no change of your thought, you're in a state of stillness. That is a key. So no matter what is affecting you from the outside, if you can retain a thought and keep one thought pure, unchanging in your mind, even at the moment of death, no matter what, that's when you're going to be released from a cycle of life and death that we experience. I think that's what the Buddhist teaching is, that you're going to go outside of those zones. That's the very, very profound, and if true, the most important thing ever.
Right.
So, you know, why not study it just in case?
Yeah, that's right. Well, Jason, unfortunately, we've come to the end of the show, and I'd like to thank you very much and give your website a wee bit of a plug here as well. You've got two places where you can find them, ladies and gentlemen, facebook.com/ Verbelli, Verbelli, and youtube.com/ The Real Verbs with a Z. Thanks very much, man.
Thank you, guys, and thank you, listeners. Wonderful.
It's been fun. All right. We'll see you again sometime, man. We'll schedule another interview with you just after we get off air here. And ladies and gentlemen, also wanted to remind people that you can subscribe to the Vinny Eastwood Show for as little as $1 a month, just to allow us to have a bit of a passive income here so that we can just keep working day in, day out, and not have to freak out every 5 minutes about where the next meal is coming from. So go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, subscribe, donate, and we'll give you some commercial free archives for it. Thank you very much for listening. We'll see you again sometime.